Now, if you remember, maybe 5 weeks ago now, we started a series on the Psalms. It's the fourth Psalm we're coming to, and we're going to look at Psalm 14. So please come with me to the Psalm which you read, Psalm 14. And we have five things to say, 5 points. And the first point, very simply, is the fool. Who are you calling a fool? Who does God call a fool? Verse 1, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Now, an atheist wrote, Christians love to quote this verse. It's been my experience that Christians choose to pick out this particular verse in order to get a free pass at insulting atheists. So is this verse just an excuse to trade insults, just an excuse to insult atheists? You know, Richard Dawkins, he calls Christians nutters and liars. And he has, and he does. So Christians can insult him back. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Is this just a verse for insulting atheists? Maybe it's something you've done. What does it mean, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God? Well, you climb to the top of the Eiffel Tower, you look over the side, it's a long way down, isn't it? Can you jump off the top of the Eiffel Tower and flap your arms and fly? No. Can you insist that you will succeed? No. You can insist all you like, can't you? But you won't fly. Why? Because you cannot defy the laws of gravity and live. Can you grow up surrounded by the reality of gravity and then insist that it doesn't apply to you? Can you do that? Well, if you think you can fly just by flapping your arms, you've lost touch with reality. You're obviously not living in the same world. What you're doing doesn't match up with the way that things are. And if you did jump off the Eiffel Tower, if you did defy gravity, what would the world call you?
Superman.
A fool. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. He thinks he can defy God and live. He grows up surrounded by the reality of God and insists that it has nothing to do with him. The way he thinks and the way he acts doesn't match with the way that things are, that God is. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Now think of this creation. If there is no God, then the nothing gave rise to the something, and the something gave rise to everything. So in that nothing was the sunset, and the snowflake, and babies, and elephants, and Beethoven's 9 symphonies, and Einstein's brain, and you. Doesn't it seem more reasonable that someone took the nothing and made the nothing into something, and made the something into everything? And is it unreasonable to call that someone God? But the fool says in his heart, there is no God. Think of you. Pete Townsend wrote, and Roger Daltrey sang, I've learned how to raise my voice in anger. Yeah, but look at my face, ain't this a smile? I'm happy when life's good, and when it's bad, I cry. I've got values, but I don't know how or why. Why are you you? Why do you get angry? Why do you laugh? Why do you cry? Your values, where do they come from? Why do you think Hitler was wrong? Why do you think he was evil? A ship is sailing along. A dog falls over the side of the ship, falls overboard. The ship carries on. A child falls overboard and the ship stops. It turns back. Why do we think we matter? Why do human beings matter more than a dog? Richard Dawkins wrote The God Delusion. But if there is no God, then nothing he writes matters. Why does he insist that he's right when there is no right? Why do we think, if there is no God, that we should take Dawkins seriously if he is no more significant than an earthworm? if there is no God? Doesn't it seem more reasonable that a creator made me and made me in his own image, a creator from whom I am estranged, and yet his fingerprints are all over me? And is it unreasonable to call that creator God? But the fool says in his heart, there is no God. Think of your conscience. Why shouldn't Hitler be allowed to get away with it? Who says it's not right? And when you do what you do, why is there a voice inside which says, that's not right? I feel I'm not the only one who knows. Why do I feel guilty if there's no one watching? If there's no one to call me to account? If there is no God? Doesn't it seem more reasonable that the maker of everything, the maker of me, has the right to give laws and then to judge me according to those laws? And is it unreasonable to call that lawgiver God? But the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. And we could go on, couldn't we? But in case we think this is just a verse for atheists, we might put verse 1 like this. The fool has said in his heart, God is not for me. Now in Genesis chapter 5, you need a man called Enoch. And we read that Enoch walked with God. Ever been for a long walk with someone? If you've been for a long walk with someone, you'll soon find out, won't you, if you've got anything in common. Maybe you thought before you went on your long walk that you get on very well, you're reasonably good friends, but it wasn't long on your walk before you ran out of things to say. Actually, you had nothing in common. You weren't good friends. But Enoch walked with God. In other words, he loved to be with God. He was walking in the same direction as God. He had so much that was in common with God. They loved the same things, they hated the same things. And God was more real to Enoch than anything else. Do you see? Enoch didn't just say, God is. He said, God is for me. There was a relationship. There was an engagement. He knew God. There was a relationship of dependence, of love, of obedience. So can the same be said of you? Do you walk with God? This is not just a verse for atheists. This is a verse for everybody. Because you can come to church, you can read your Bible, you can sing the hymns, you can say your prayers, but in your heart you say, God is unreal. In your heart you can still say, God is not for me. And the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Well, let's move on to point number 2. Living like a fool. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. They have done abominable works. There is none who does good. Okay, use your imagination. I have 3 glasses in front of me. 2 glasses are filled with water, and 1 glass is filled with ink. Let's take that first glass of water. It represents the first man as he was made. Beautiful glass of clear water. It's pure. He was holy. He was good. The first man. And then the glass of ink. It's the devil. Corrupt. Abominable. Wicked. So what's the third glass? It's what happens to man. Satan spoke to our first parents, and he spoke the language of rebellion. They listened, and they walked out on God. In other words, we take 1 drop from the glass filled with ink, and we add it to our glass filled with water. And what happens? Everything is discolored. We're not as wicked as the devil. We're not a glass of ink. But neither are we pure, holy, and good. Every part of us has been poisoned and tainted by sin. And that's what it's saying. They are corrupt. They've done abominable works. There is none who does good. You see, if I say there is no God, then there's no lawgiver. There's no one to say what's good, what's bad. So from now on, I'll decide what's good and what's bad. It's up to me. And I won't get my answers from God because, of course, there is no God. So, of course, now there's no limit to my options, is there? I'm free to decide. I'm free to decide on any option I like, and who's to tell me I'm wrong? And, of course, if there's no judge, then there's no comeback. So I can do what I like. I can ignore my conscience. I can live exactly as I choose. And who's to say I'm wrong? And you see, if your heart is poisoned by sin, if it's tainted, if it's corrupted by that ink, what will you choose? How far will you go? Where do you end up? You end up at verse 1. They are corrupt. They have done abominable works. There is none who does good. Are we overstating it? What if you could have whatever you wanted? No lack of opportunity, all the money, time, energy you wanted to do what you wanted. And what if you had no conscience to restrain you? What if you could be sure you could do whatever you like and there was the certainty of no comeback? How far would you go? How would you live? What would you do? How far has society gone? And of course, every now and again, someone pops up who goes the whole way, doesn't he? Says Pol Pot, known as Brother Number One, the ruler of Cambodia. You've heard of the killing fields, where as a result of his rule, up to 3 million Cambodians were murdered. Nearly a third of the country's population were killed, including many believers. There'd been a revival in Cambodia before he came to power. But when you look at Pol Pot, he had a good middle-class upbringing. He studied in Paris. He taught in a private school where he taught history and geography. And by common consent, he was liked and he was respected. He was the teacher that people wanted to be with. So what happened? He said, there is no God. He said, because there is no God, I will make the rules. And I will tell you what is good. And because he gave full expression to the sin that was in his heart, look where it ended up. The fool has said in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. They have done abominable works. There is none who does good. I'm told that a certain Dr. Ives, I don't know who he was, a certain Dr. Ives, as he watched people being led to execution for a variety of offences, he used to say, as they went past his window, off to the scaffold, he used to say, there goes Dr. Ives. Because he realised it was only the grace of God that held him back from being in the same position. The seed of every known sin is in my heart. I am not the pure glass of water. Everything has been poisoned. Everything has been tainted. They are corrupt. They have done abominable works. There is none who does good. That's a description of me, says the Bible. Well, someone's thinking, yeah, but it says there, none who does good. You don't have to be religious to do good. Well, of course, if there is no God, there is no good, is there? If there is no God, there's no good and there's no evil. There's no right and there's no wrong. If there is no God, who's to say what's good? You can't have it both ways. You can't say there is no God and then go through God's pockets before you dispose of the body. You say, we won't have God, but we'll have God's morality. Can't do that, can you? If you're being consistent. But anyway, what is good? Peter says of Jesus, he went about doing good. If you want to know what good is, you've got to look at Jesus. And all of us measured against Jesus, if that's the standard, if that's what it means to do good, then none of us has done good, have we? We love God with all our heart. We're saying, well, there is no God, okay, but have you loved then your neighbour as yourself? Then you're not good. It's not compared to Jesus. So point number one is the fool. Point number two is living like a fool. The point number three we'll call ship of fools. Look what it says in verses 2 and 3. The Lord looks down from heaven upon the children of men to see if there are any who understand, who seek God. They have all turned aside. They have together become corrupt. There is none who does good. No, not one. So God looks down from heaven, looks upon the human race. There's none of us to escape his gaze. He's looking. What's he looking for? He's looking to see if there's anyone who understands. So God meets with Moses at the burning bush. Moses asks God, "What is your name?" And God gives a very strange answer. He says, "I am who I am." What does God mean? He's saying, well, there are no categories, no labels. What is my name? I'm not giving you a label to stick on me, because there is no one like me. The only true God whose godness is inexpressible. I am who I am. As far as space is concerned, I am everywhere, and I am here. As far as time is concerned, I am eternal, and I am now. As far as power is concerned, there's nothing that I cannot do, and you have to do with me. As far as knowledge is concerned, I know everything, and I know everything about you. I am who I am. I am three persons and one being. Can you understand that? I am who I am. But do we bow the knee? Do we worship? Are we overwhelmed at the transcendence and majesty and glory of God? Is there anyone who understands? God looks down from heaven to see if there are any who seek him. Now, there are lots of religious people, aren't there? Lots of people who might call themselves Christians. But when they discover that God has a human face, when they see that the godness of God is seen in the face of Jesus Christ, the Jesus of the Bible, and that there is no seeking of God outside the Jesus of the Bible, then people don't want to know. Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." So Jesus is not just a way, he's the way. It's not his truth, it's the truth. If you want to live the life, then says Jesus, "I am the only life." And so when people get the message, when people understand that, they don't want to know. They've all turned aside, they've together become corrupt. There is none who does good, no, not one. Says the Bible, I don't understand. When I'm faced with the glory and majesty of God, I don't want to know. I'm not going to bow the knee. And I don't seek after God, not when I discover that he's Jesus, and I go my own way. And that word there, they've all become corrupt. It just simply means rotten. You know, you go to your fruit bowl, and you find something unspeakable at the bottom of your fruit bowl. You're supposed to throw it out, and oh, look at it. That's what it means. It's what we are. We've gone rotten. I don't do good. You, me, we, us. And you know that's true, don't you? Because tonight, if it was a case of this is your life, how many witnesses could we call who could testify that you refused to put yourself out for them? Who could testify that you'd hurt them? The things that you'd said. You said that to them. I can't believe it. And you did that, and you refused to do that. We all stand condemned. The wonder the world is as it is. It's a ship of fools. Okay, moving on more quickly. Number four. Can't they see it? Verse four. Have all the workers of iniquity no knowledge? What is it with the fool? How can you believe that nothing gave rise to something and something gave rise to everything? You know, is their unbelief excusable? Is it just that the fool, when he says there is no God, he just doesn't know any better? Is it that they just don't know about God? Have all the workers of iniquity no knowledge? That's the question that's being asked. And the answer comes back, on the contrary, they know. It's just that they don't like what they know. So they say in their heart, there is no God. But the reality of God is seen everywhere. We've spoken about it already. It's seen in creation. It's seen in the way we're made. It's seen in our conscience. God has even given us a book in which he's put words, his words. God breathed words, the Bible. Is it that atheists and unbelievers, is it that they don't know and their ignorance is excusable? They know all right. And we know that they know by the way in which they treat believers. They know all right because you can tell they know by the way they treat those who love and trust God. How do they treat them? Verse 4. Have all the workers of iniquity no knowledge, who eat up my people as they eat bread? Hostility towards Christians is as ordinary as every day as eating a sandwich. Yeah? On the way, I came in this evening, someone was eating a sandwich. And they say, oh, you're eating a sandwich. Nothing more ordinary than eating a sandwich. The persecution of Christians is ordinary as every day as eating a sandwich. Who eat up my people as they eat bread. What happens at school or at work or in the community or maybe your family when the Christian breaks cover? When the Christian says, I love the Lord Jesus Christ and I'm going to follow him. I'm sorry, I can't join in. I'm going to have to say no. How do people react? Who eat up my people as they eat bread. And sometimes that reaction leads to beatings and killings, and happens all over the world. We know that people know there is a God, because when they meet those who say there is a God, they hate them and they persecute them. Nothing is more powerful than the way they treat believers to indicate, to explain, to declare that they know there's a God. For two centuries, it was official policy in the Roman Empire to put Christians to death. I mentioned it before, a slave girl called Blandina. She was tortured horrifically before her death. A record was kept of it for future generations, and you can read about it. It is quite horrific. And throughout her torturing, which went on for days, she kept uttering these words. She said, I am a Christian. We do nothing to be ashamed of. We do nothing to be ashamed of. Why then do they torture her? Why do they put her to death? It's because she was a reminder, wasn't she? That God is. She was a rebuke to the lives of those who said there is no God. So if we can't get rid of God, if we can't get rid of Jesus, then Blandina and every persecuted Christian, we will get rid of you. Verse 6, you shame the counsel of the poor. The world scoffs at Christians. And there's a laugh at their expense. They're a joke. They're losers. But you see, every time they eat up God's people as they would eat a sandwich, every time they laugh at what Christians believe, what is it? What's it declaring? It's declaring that they know that God is. And this Christian is a rebuke to them. It's a reminder to them. It's a reminder that they're accountable to this God which they want nothing to do with. And therefore, we can't bear to have his followers around us. Because we're told, verse 5, God is with the generation of the righteous. We know that Richard Dawkins knows because of the way he treats believers, the way he treats Christians. Because if there isn't a God, why bother? Why get so animated, upset, go into writing, go around touring, telling people if there is no God? Doesn't matter, does it? It's because these people are a reminder to you that God is. So when it says, have all the workers of iniquity no knowledge, can't they see it? Yes, they can. They know. Their reaction to Christians tells you that they know. Their reaction to the Bible tells you that they know. And yet for all that, verse 4, they refuse to call on the Lord. Isn't that extraordinary? You actually deep down inside know it's all true. And yet for all that, they refuse to call on the Lord. It's madness, isn't it? That's why it says, the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. Look at verse 5. There they are in great fear. If you live without God, life is frightening. Life is insecure. And it's never more frightening and never more insecure than when you face death. Because you go to face Him. You go to face Him in the judgment. Charles Spurgeon, 19th century preacher in London, has an urgent call to visit a dying man. He says, I stood by his side and spoke to him. But he gave me no answer. I spoke again, but the only consciousness he had was a foreboding of terror, mingled with a stupor of approaching death. And soon the man was dead. Spurgeon goes on, the man in his lifetime used to jeer at me. In strong language he had denounced me as a hypocrite. Yet no sooner was he smitten by the darts of death than he sought my presence and counsel. There they are in great fear. But he knew where to find God, didn't he? Verse 5, for God is with the generation of the righteous. Call for Spurgeon. But it was too late. Says Spurgeon, he had, when in health, wickedly refused Christ. Too late he sighed for the ministry of reconciliation and sought to enter in at the closed door. But he was not able. There was no space left for repentance, for he had wasted the opportunities which God had long granted him. My friend, do you see why, says the fool, has said in his heart, there is no God? To know that God is, and you know that, if you have hostility to God's word, hostility to Christians, if they're a rebuke to you, it's because you know that God is. And to know one day I'm going to have to face Him. Yeah? And I go through my life full of insecurities and full of fears, and that the root of those fears and insecurities is that one day I will die and I must face God, the God who I says isn't. And those fears are there because I know there's a heaven and I know there's a hell deep down. To know all of those things and then to refuse to call on Him. Have all the workers of iniquity no knowledge? This is a question, isn't it? Who eat up my people as bread and do not call on the Lord? God is saying, can you believe it? It's not that they don't know. It's that they do know. And yet, knowing what they know, they refuse to call on the name of the Lord. That's why there's a madness in it, isn't there? To know actually it is true. And to refuse to call upon Him. You remember the poster on the bus, don't you? There's probably no God. Now stop worrying and enjoy your life. Yeah, remember that poster? Think about it. There's probably no God. Now stop worrying and enjoy your life. Are you willing to bet your never dying soul on that? You've got a pain. The pain doesn't go away. And the milkman says, there's probably no cancer. We've got a great milkman. But if he puts his hand on my shoulder and he says, there's probably no cancer, do I feel assured? Does my milkman give me peace of mind? Would you risk it? Wouldn't you want a second opinion? Wouldn't you say, well, at least go and visit the doctor and have a word with him? Won't you even least call on the name of the Lord? Won't you even do that? Lord, if you're not there, then probably what I'm saying sounds a bit silly. But that's the worst of it, isn't it? I just sound a bit silly. But Lord, if you are there, won't you reveal yourself to me? Won't you meet with me? If you are there, won't you come and make yourself known and bring me to fall on my knees in worship? Will you pray that? There is no God, or maybe God is not for me. Can you really go through life with that mantra? Isn't it better to call upon him? So can't they see it? Yes, they can. And still they shut him out. Have all the workers of iniquity no knowledge? Who eat up my people as they eat bread and do not call on the Lord? That's why it says the fool has said in his heart, there is no God. It's madness. Especially as we close verse point number 5, when we read that folly has no future. Now, why are there believers in this world? Why are there people who say that God is and God is for me? It's because God has met with them. They did say there is no God. And they were corrupt and workers of iniquity. And they were incapable of doing good. They would look at those descriptions and say, that is exactly the person that I was. But God in his wonderful love has met with them and conquered them. And they understood. They understood. They understood the message of the cross. And that far from it being foolish, it was the wisdom of God. And they saw that Jesus was the only wise man who has ever lived, even though he was mocked as a fool. And on that cross, he died the punishing death that fools deserve to die. And they've come to Jesus Christ. And they've cried, be merciful to me, a sinner. And they've come to enjoy peace with God. And they've come to discover the pleasures of God. That God is, and he's wonderful, and you can know him and enjoy him. And they're looking forward to that day when they will dwell with God forever. That's the sense of it, verse 7. It's what David is saying. Oh, that the salvation of Israel would, Israel is the people of God, that the salvation of Israel would come out of Zion. When the Lord brings back the captivity of his people, let Jacob rejoice and Israel be glad. They're waiting for the day when God himself in Jesus Christ will come out of Zion, will come out of heaven. And that having lived as strangers and exiles in this world, then the Lord will take them, gather them up, and take them home. God watches over his people now. You shame the counsel of the poor, but the Lord is his refuge. That's why there will be believers in every generation, whatever the world thinks or does to them. He watches over his people now, and God is coming for his people soon. Oh, that the salvation of Israel would come out of Zion when the Lord brings back the captivity of his people, when he brings the exiles home. So who will have the last laugh? My friend, folly has no future. That's why it's the fool who says in his heart, there is no God. So will you be wise tonight and call on the Lord?